Chapter 17. A pre-dawn knock on Sheriff Ellison's front door filled him with dread. Nothing good ever happened after 2 a.m. If it had been Kennesaw or another deputy trying to reach him, he would have received a call beforehand. Ellison got out of bed, trying his best not to wake Nguet. But he remembered that she'd already left, gone to Atlanta to be with her granddaughter. Pushing the thoughts of her aside, he felt his way over to his dresser in the darkness. The visitor knocked again. Ellison fumbled around for his pants and moved blindly toward his armchair. Reaching out, he felt for his holster, snatched it from the chair, and fastened it around his waist. The sheriff slowly stepped down the hallway towards the front door without turning on the light or making a sound. Before the next knock could come, he flicked on the exterior porch light, blinding whoever was there, to his movements inside. He peered between the curtains of the dining room window, careful not to disturb them. Any ruffling might reveal his location. Two men stood outside, one on the porch about to knock again, and another one step down on the stairs. Both of them wore baseball caps and blue windbreakers with yellow lettering on the sleeves, the uniforms of U.S. Marshals Service. Ellison moved over to the front door, turned the deadbolt, and opened it about halfway. "What brings you gentlemen out here?" he addressed them. "Sheriff," greeted the agent standing at the door. "I'm Inspector James Weathers, and this here is Deputy Kelly Scott. May we have a word with you? What would you possibly need to talk about at this hour?" "We just need to have a brief conversation with you," Weathers explained. "We'd prefer to have it in our jeep," added Scott. Ellison found the request unusual. It sounded more like the prelude to an interrogation as opposed to a brief conversation. "There's no one else home," he said. "We can talk right here. Or better yet, come inside." "We'd rather talk in the jeep," Scott repeated. Ellison spotted the Jeep Cherokee parked outside and reluctantly stepped out onto the porch. "We don't think that will be necessary," commented the agent, eyeballing the sheriff's holster. Ellison felt his heartbeat quicken. The rush of blood pressure sent his focus into overdrive, and his instincts rapidly took hold of his mind. "I never leave my house in the middle of the night without it," he said, beaming his resolve directly into Scott's skull. Relinquishing his firearm was not in any way negotiable. The deputy stared back, revealing no lack of conviction on his part. A silent standoff ensued, lasting an uncomfortable half minute. Law enforcers are conditioned to never yield, to never back down. When faced with resistance to their demands, their response is simply to escalate, all the way to violence if necessary. The vast portion of the civilian population quickly and wisely capitulates before it comes to that, regardless of the legality of the demand. But this was a standoff between two law enforcers, an irresistible force and an immovable object. The standard model could not resolve the situation. Deputy Scott stared at the sheriff like a poker player attempting to unnerve a weaker opponent. Ellison continued glaring back, unflinching. He knew that if the marshals forced him to give up his firearm, then it was not just a simple conversation they sought, and that he was, in fact, being detained, questioned, and possibly arrested. He needed to know that before he would proceed with them into their vehicle. He considered just coming out and asking them directly, but he didn't want to do that. Asking directly might raise suspicion in their minds, although he had no clear idea what they might think he was guilty of. Exhausted by the silence, Ellison decided to press them. "Well, I can keep my sidearm, or you two can come down to my office, and we can chat during business hours. How does that sound?" "You'd probably lose a lot of sleep if we had to go away now and do this later," replied Scott. "I haven't been sleeping much since my wife left for Georgia, but the suspense is killing me." "It's okay, Kelly," Weathers intervened. "He can keep his sidearm." Sheriff Ellison had gotten his answer. He wasn't being detained. Still, he found the irregularity of the situation curious. He reasoned that it had to do with his aiding in Turcotte's disappearance. He knew how meticulous the Department of Justice was. They'd probably sent the marshals to gather information on him, and were likely attempting to glean Turcotte's whereabouts and probably build a file on the sheriff as a person of interest. They wanted to make a statement by knocking on his door in the darkest pre-dawn hours. They must have been unaware that Nguet had left. "Shall we go, then?" Ellison asked. The two marshals escorted the sheriff into the jeep. Ellison was offered the front passenger seat, while Deputy Scott took the rear seat directly behind him, where the sheriff could not see him without turning awkwardly. Weathers got in the driver's side.